Good evening, Los Angeles in Southern California. You are listening to the Veterans Voice on KABC 790 from Los Angeles. I'm your host, Amanda Manier. I am a veteran advocate and VA disability attorney with the Veterans Law Group. We work exclusively with veterans all across the country pursuing their disability compensation. The Veterans Voice, the show, is all about highlighting and honoring veterans, recognizing organizations that are helping veterans, and also providing important news, answering questions on how you can get support as a veteran or a family member of a veteran in dealing with the VA. This is a live show. We would love to take your calls in dealing with anything related to VA disability compensation. If I can't answer your question, I can generally point you in the right direction. A little background on me. Again, I am an attorney. I worked for years as a business attorney. And living in Southern California, I actually am based out of San Diego. I have had friends and people who are very near and dear to me who served in the military, ultimately became veterans, and I kind of just watched the process, especially as many of them came back from Iraq and Afghanistan and were struggling with the VA and kind of like looked at, okay, what skills do I have that I can help kind of support these veterans and dear friends of mine? At that time, I didn't know anything about the fact that you as a attorney can help veterans in a full-time capacity. But I found my way to the Veterans Law Group working with the owner, Mark Littman, who has been doing VA disability work for about 25 years. So there's nothing like learning from one of the best. And now I spend a lot of my time educating veteran service officers, educating veterans directly, on not only what they can, how to navigate the process. It is a bureaucracy. It can be very frustrating. And I look at it as I'm kind of quality control for the VA. My job is to make sure that the VA does what they're supposed to do in your particular case or the cases in which we're working on. So also on this show, what I want to do is highlight, again, people who are helping veterans who are also veterans themselves. So this evening, I am happy to welcome Jeremiah. He is a U.S. Navy veteran. He is currently working his way through the VA disability process, has gotten some stuff done, also struggling with others. And he has established himself as a post-military career as a VA mortgage lender. So we're going to talk a little bit about mortgages today as well. If you have questions as we're going about, please feel free to call in and we would be happy to take your questions. The number to call in at is 1-800-222-5222. That's 1-800-222-5222. Jeremiah, are you with us?
Hello, Amanda. Yes, I am. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you are based out of Sacramento, correct?
Yes, I am.
Is Sacramento home to you?
It is. It's where I grew up and had all my firsts and decided that I needed to go do something different. And I went into the Navy from Sacramento and swore that I would never come back here when I left. And here I am. I did 10 years in the Navy. That's where you and I met, in San Diego. And just for some reason, when I was done and decided to part ways with the Navy, it just made sense to come back up here where my family was.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was kind of the first thing I wanted to get into, is spend a little bit of time of talking a little bit about your military career, starting out with what was it that kind of prompted you to join the Navy?
Well, a friend of mine, his mom pointed out to us that we weren't really living, we were just existing. And at the time, we just dismissed it. You know, we were just 20-year-old kids who knew better than her, and, right? We thought it was completely okay that we were failing out of junior college. And then as just some time went by, and I ended up breaking my arm, and I kind of found myself in a bad position, and I was like, wow, I don't really have a good job. I don't have a lot going for myself. I said, I don't have any money. You know, what am I going to do to change this? So it took about 6 months to get my arm healed up, and during that time, one of my buddies had gone into the Army, and I just noticed all the doors that it had opened up for him. So I went down and talked to a Navy recruiter and an Air Force recruiter, and just for some reason, I decided to go into the Navy, just the allure of being on a ship and the possibility of going all over the world. So I was like, sounds good to me.
And what year was that you joined the Navy?
That was in 1998.
Okay, so this was, we hear a lot in interviewing people, it's like, they, you know, they were, 9/11 happened and they decided to jump in, but you were really looking at it as a career to better your life, to travel the world, kind of during that peaceful period.
It was something different. It was a change and something that was going to get me out of Sacramento. And not that I was doing bad, but I just wasn't doing good. I didn't realize what my potential was because nobody had pointed it out to me, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So a way to change your life.
Absolutely. I figured, I said, you know, they're going to give me some money for school. They're going to send me to this electronics school for 2 years, which, you know, sounded cool. Right? I was like, sure, I can learn that. And it was just something different. So I figured, nice. Worst case scenario, I knew I could get a job better than waiting tables when I got out. And so, I went in. I went to boot camp at Great Lakes. I was there. I started in September of 1998. Been my 2.5 months there. And then I was in Great Lakes for a year going through school. And it was wonderful just being in Chicago during that time period. I was like, what's this? Didn't really feel like I was in the military, so I was just going to school. Then I ended up going to a ship for a few months in the summer of 99. And then I went to Virginia Beach, Virginia for a year for follow-on school there.
And then
I went out to... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and then from there I made it out to San Diego to my first permanent duty station on board the aircraft carrier USS John C. Stennis.
Nice. I know a few people who served on the Stennis, that's for sure. You served for how many years in the Navy?
I was in the Navy for 10 years total.
And was the majority of that based out of San Diego?
Yes. I mean, I did 2 years in school, 4 years on an aircraft carrier in San Diego that half the time we were gone, so all over the world. And then I was stationed in Point Loma for 3 years for shore duty. And during that time, I actually got activated on a 14-month tour to go overseas in Iraq in 2006. And then I was embedded with the Marine Corps Infantry Unit over there. And so that was kind of broken up. So the majority of the time I was centered in San Diego, but I went out to various places.
Well, and I would love to talk to you a little bit about kind of how the Navy changed or what your, how your service changed after 9/11 happened. Cause I know that that was, you know, going into the military with a certain idea of what's going to happen. And then, like you said, you ended up embedded with forces overseas. You're listening to 790. I'm with, the Veteran's Voice, and this is Jeremiah. He's talking a little bit about his Navy career. So tell us a little bit what happened, like kind of from your perspective after 9/11 happened from a military, serving in the military.
I mean, it was just different. It was odd. And I remember the day we were actually out to sea and we were supposed to pull back in the next day. We were just doing carrier calls, which is when the squadrons come out and practice landing and taking off on the aircraft carrier. And I remember just waking up, getting ready, and there was something going on the TV, and it just looked different. And then we saw the second plane go into the tower, and I remember our commanding officer came over, and he basically explained to us what was going on, and like the next words out of his mouth was, "We are at war." And what's so interesting is I remember hearing those words, and at the time it was like, it was very surreal, but 20 years later, looking back on it, it's like, well, we're still at war. You know, it just, and I remember, and because that's defined, you know, basically for the next 8 years, it defined my life in the military. And then for a chunk afterwards, I was defense contractor. So it's still, like I was still working in that capacity, sorting the military. And it's just, it's changed me so much. And like, I guess when I went overseas and was embedded with the Marine Corps, it completely changed my outlook on the war. At that point, I was just some guy on an aircraft carrier going cool places, watching planes take off and fixing electronics. That was kind of the extent of my job. You know, we'd complain about the heat, and then we'd go into the air conditioning. We'd complain about the air conditioning. It was, even though the war was going on, it really wasn't different for us being sailors being at sea. But once I actually got augmented and embedded with an infantry unit, that completely changed things.
So what were you doing in the Navy that had you being embedded with the Marines? What was your job?
I was a radar and a satellite communications specialist. And what I ended up doing with the Marine Corps when I went over with them is I was an electronic warfare officer embedded with them. And this was in 2006. And at the time, the IED threat was massive. All over Iraq and Afghanistan, basically, we were just our troops were getting targeted with IEDs, and they were basically command wire, which is a line detonated one, and they were also using radio control technology. Everything from a cordless telephone to a garage door opener. And being a radar guy, we have a pretty good background in RF spectrum, how receivers, how transmitters work, the power of them. So the Navy got 280 of us together and said, hey, all of you guys have this similar background. We're going to embed each one of you at the battalion level in operating in Iraq and Afghanistan, and you're going to help them use these crew systems. And the crew systems basically were preventing the detonation of the roadside bombs. And without going too technical, it's basically
I'm going to stop you right there because I want to revisit that, and we got to go to a break. So if you just pause for a second, we're talking with Jeremiah, U.S. Navy veteran, on the Veterans Voice with KABC. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Veterans Voice. I'm Amanda Manier, and we are broadcasting live on KABC 790. Tonight, we're talking with Jeremiah. He is a U.S. Navy veteran. He also is a specialist in VA loans. We're just kind of digging into a little bit about his military career. We're going to talk about his transitioning out of the military, pursuing his VA claim, and we're going to touch a little bit on his experience with VA mortgages. Welcome back, Jeremiah.
Thank you, Amanda. It's good to be back.
Thank you. So right before we were going to the break, I wanted to kind of highlight what you were talking about is you went into the military, you ended up working in electronics, and then ultimately you ended up after 9/11 being embedded with the Marines because you had an expertise that was helping with the IED problem that we all probably are relatively familiar with.
That's what they told me. At the time when I got the orders, I honestly have no idea what an IED was. But, it made some sense. They put a unit of us together and basically said, hey, you guys understand electronics. You understand how radars, transmitters, receivers work. And we essentially used radar technology to neutralize roadside bombs that Al-Qaeda and other forces operating over there were basically using transmitters to operate. Or to detonate. Mm-hmm. And so basically they would time it so the convoy was driving by, and when the vehicles were lined up at a certain point, they would either make a phone call to a receiver or press a button, send some sort of signal over, and a bomb would detonate. Well, we had technology in place, but we weren't using it on vehicles for this purpose. And the military said, hey, why don't we put these jammers, because essentially we're jamming electronic signals onto these vehicles to prevent the detonation of the bombs. And essentially, it just works, and we're driving down the road. We identify a frequency that's out there, and we just hit it with power. And we hit it with so much power that they couldn't get power to the signal. And I would always explain it to people at, like, the lowest level terms. I said, basically, if two people are trying to have a conversation, and somebody just comes in and starts yelling and yelling and yelling louder than the person trying to talk to the other one. And it's essentially that. You're just overpowering or dominating the transmission conversation.
That makes a lot of sense. And, for sure. Yeah, so you ended up as a U.S. You ended up as a Navy sailor who was assigned to a ship, ending up boots on the ground in some of the roughest parts of Iraq helping the Marines. Is that fair?
And somehow I wore the Army uniform along the way. I went from San Diego to South Carolina, was issued an Army uniform, got to Baghdad, Iraq, and wore that Army uniform for about 6 weeks. And then they said, we're sending you to the Marine Corps. And then I had to get a haircut and start wearing that uniform.
And that was your first tour, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now I know you and I have been friends for a long time, and I know that you have been over to Iraq and Afghanistan many times. I don't remember off the top of my head how many were in military versus defense contractor.
This was my third military deployment at that time.
Okay.
And you
have experience in both Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes, but at that time I had actually not been boots on ground in Afghanistan. We were involved in the Afghanistan effort, but purely off the coast. Mm-hmm. But since getting out of the military, I've been over to Afghanistan drunk 7 times.
Right. And that's when you were working for the defense contractor?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about, like, making the decision of getting out. You know, transitioning out of the military can be a bit overwhelming. On our last show, we talked with Mike Kuipers, who is somebody who was a, you know, commanding officer in the Navy, retired out of the Navy, and he now spends his full time working with essentially the Navy, helping people transition out, getting their resume together, finding jobs that's going to work for them, helping them with their VA disability claims. What was your transition out like?
Well, I had no intention of ever staying in the Navy. None whatsoever. I came in, I wanted to get some college job experience and get out. I went over to Iraq. I did that 14-month tour. I was supposed to get out right after I returned home. And it was just something that happened while I was there. I actually put in a package to be a naval flight officer, which is, for lack of a better term, goose, the backseater.
Mm-hmm.
I had made the decision. I was like, I'm going to stay in. I was like, I'm going to be a pilot, or not really a pilot, but a fake pilot. I'm going to tell people I'm a pilot, though. And I'm going to do, you know, just ride my time out and hang out and just, you know, enjoy this, see what happens. And I was talking with some of my friends of mine, and it was then, this was my decision while I was in Iraq. And then I came home in 2007, and things were just different. Mm. Right? It's my naval career was moving along nicely. I picked up chief. I was making rank very fast. I was, because of the tour I've just been on, I was given a lot of latitude and freedom that most sailors don't normally get. Right? It was just, and, but I kind of, at the same time, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go be this pilot. I'm going to hang out. Like, everything was changing. And I kind of realized that. I was like, I don't know if I want to be a part of this change. And I had a conversation with my buddy, Chris, and he was contemplating the same thing. And he just looked at me and he's like, hey man, he's like, you're going to blink your eyes and you're going to be 50. Right? He's like, and he's like, you might have a lot of stuff. He's like, but you just, one day you're going to look back and you're going to ask yourself, did I make the right decision? And I just, that stuck with me. And I started seeing more and more changes going on. And then I was just like, you know, I think I need to get out of the Navy. And I was like, I'm just going to stick with my original plan and get out. And I wanted to go to graduate school. So I was going to go to graduate school. And I caught a lot of grief from the military. It's like, why are you getting out? You know, your career is so good, this and that. No, nobody ever understood. I was trying to explain to them that things had changed. And they're like, no. So I just, you know, I never planned on staying in. So finally, I just defaulted to that. I got out.
Right. And
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that I know that a lot of people were putting a lot of pressure on you because not many people make chief as fast as you did. So your career was, you know, they didn't want to lose you. I understand that completely. I want to talk a little bit about the kind of transition in the VA disability process, since that's a large subject of what we talk about on this show. One of the things I ask when I'm interviewing veterans is I ask them is, you know, what kind of education were you getting? We all know if you're a veteran, you've heard something called the TAPS class and that kind of thing. But, you know, you're working also in VA loans. And like, what kind of education were you given on the way out? Was it thorough? Was it quick? Did you know what you were doing when you got out? Did you think it was important?
Absolutely nothing. It was recommended that we go to TAPS class twice. Once at a year out, and then again at like 2 to 3 months out. That was very unique and only done at a handful of commands. I went both times, and I feel like the information was less the second time I went. And they basically said, you can get unemployment. You can go to college.
And that's state unemployment. We're not talking about a VA unemployment, right?
No. There was a representative in there from the EDD who pretty much ran the whole program. And I was like, so I now know how to apply for unemployment and where I can get resume help. I was like, neither of which I need.
Right.
Right. There wasn't any talk about the GI Bill, what's available to veterans. No discussion whatsoever about VA claims for disability. There was a brief touch on it and said, if anybody got injured and has their medical record and is staying in San Diego when you get out of the Navy, come see me. And it was like, and from what, looking back now, I realized that that was the VA medical rep part. or the Hope of the Claim, whoever that was supposed to be. And I didn't even know the VA loan existed or what it was about.
And you're talking about the loan for a home, the VA mortgage loan.
Yeah, the VA home loan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I knew about my education benefits only because I ended up having to use my GI Bill to pay for a couple months of school while I was in. And so that's where I got schooled up on that. And so I knew how to use it when I got out. But a lot of people don't even know how to use their GI Bill when they get out.
Right. And so I think that the VA, just to do a little bit of education here before we close out the half hour, a lot of what the VA kind of depends upon is people, organizations and outside things. So with the GI Bill, they depend upon the schools to educate the veterans on what they get for the GI Bill. It's really hard to just find straight information about the GI Bill. When it comes to disability compensation, what I've talked about on the show before, and I believe you and I have talked about it as well, is it's not thoroughly discussed. And even if it is, it's like on the checklist of things you got to do to get out. And all you care about at that point is doing your checklist to get out. You're not really thinking about, like, I'm going to be out of the VA, I'm going to be out of the military, I'm going to be disabled. And that's such a huge word to put on somebody, is your disability compensation. But one of the things that I tell people all the time is, so for those of you who are not veterans that are listening, it's basically a formula where somebody goes into the service, as part of their contract, when they sign the contract, we as the public say to them, we're going to compensate you for any disability that you incur while you are in the service. So that could be a back injury, a knee injury, it could be psychological with PTSD. And it's our job to say, okay, this is part of the contract. When you get out, if you have this disability, you have an in-service injury, you have a current disability, and there's a link between the two. So the easiest example I can give is in a back injury environment, you hurt your back in the military, you get out of the military, and you're struggling with, you know, degenerative disease or a lower back strain, and the doctor says, okay, yeah, that's related to your service, the VA will then compensate you for that. And what I see a lot of times with people getting out, they're like, oh, I don't need it, I'm good. You know, other people need it more than I do, all of that kind of thing. And I would try to explain to them is that back injury when you're, you know, 27 years old getting out of the military may not be that bad. But back injuries generally don't get better. They get worse over time. So you fast forward 10 to 20 years, if you've never service connected it, that becomes where it's difficult to try to argue it's related to my injury in service. Where if you will get out of the military, get it service connected right away, even if it's at a 0 or 10%, that's the first hurdle you get over. Then later, if it gets worse, you're just telling the VA it's gotten worse. So in your case, Jeremiah, did you apply right away or did you wait? What did you do?
I did not apply right away. I had a really good friend who kept telling me that I should. But for some reason, I thought it was a waste of time. And I was just like, I'm fine, even though I was being treated for skin cancer as I departed the military. I had surgery on my foot and have a 3-inch screw in my foot and had a couple other injuries. But I was just like, no, I'm fine. I don't need any of this. And then one day it just kind of dawned on me that maybe, you know, I should get some of this stuff looked at and taken care of because it's going to be a problem down the road.
Right, exactly. And we're coming up on a break here, and I want to talk about that when we get back. As much as you feel comfortable about it, I'm certainly not going to ask you to share off your medical details to the world. But you had a couple of unique circumstances, specifically on the skin cancer you mentioned, and also the back claim, which we are currently in the process of pursuing. So when we get back, I kind of want to circle around about that, talk to you about what your process has been, your experience with comp and pen exams, dealing with the VA Medical Center, that kind of thing. You also had a couple of unique things because you were overseas as a defense contractor in the middle of this process. So I would like to kind of address that when we get back, if you're open to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thank you. You are listening to The Veteran's Voice. This is Amanda Menier. I am a VA attorney and veteran advocate. We work exclusively on VA claims at the Veterans Law Group. I did have a couple of people who mentioned that they didn't want to necessarily call into the show and talk publicly about their claims. But if you would like to reach us directly, my office directly, Our phone number is 888-811-0523. You can also go to our website and request a free consultation at veteranslaw.com. That's probably the easiest way we can gather a little information about your claim and then be able to reach out to you and talk to you specifically about your question. So if you don't feel comfortable calling in and asking those questions, please reach out to those resources as well. Welcome back to the Veterans Voice. This is Amanda Manier, and I am broadcasting live on KABC 790. Our show is all about highlighting veterans, honoring veterans, helping them with their VA claims process, and just talking with people who are supporting veterans in different aspects where maybe they weren't quite aware. We talked about the GI Bill a little bit earlier. We're going to talk about VA loans. Right now in this segment, I want to dig in a little bit to the VA claims process. I work for the Veterans Law Group. We are a law firm that works exclusively with veterans all across the country, helping them with their VA claims process, their disability compensation specifically. And, you know, I often refer to people that I'm quality control for the VA. It's my job to make sure that the VA does what they're supposed to do to help veterans. We're joined by Jeremiah. He does VA loans. He is a Navy veteran himself and is also kind of in the midst of the claims process. Some of his issues have been somewhat resolved. Others we're still in the process of working on. Welcome back, Jeremiah.
Thank you, Amanda.
So let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned before we took the break that you were a little hesitant to file your claim. It was kind of this, I'm not sure I need that, you know, all of that, which I hear a lot. And what kind of prompted you to finally say, okay, we're going to do this?
There's a couple different things. I mean, obviously the skin cancer was an issue. My mom had melanoma, but she had that earlier on. But there was a threat of it coming back. And I had always gone to see a dermatologist, like do my follow-on care, because my mom had melanoma and I had my diagnosis in the Navy. So I was like, I'm going to stay on top of this. Right, mm-hmm. That's a dumb way to go out. And it just, once my medical bill started stacking up, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just the copay. It was, you know, just $300 here, $400 there, $600 there, $100 here. And I was just starting to cost me money to see this. You know, I would complain about it or whatever, but didn't think anything of it. Life was, you know, I was good. I could afford it. But then I also kind of thought to myself, what if this is a problem in the future? Right. What if I have cancer, like full blown cancer sometime down the road and I need radiation or chemo or like legit treatment? And I said, you know, and it is, I think I'd recently seen a show about like, or heard a radio show about like, majority of bankruptcies caused by medical bills. Right. And it was like, I don't know. I kind of put the two together or whatever, but I was just like, I just need to go get this fixed and looked at and taken care of. And if nothing else, just so I could go see somebody. And
right, because and when you have a situation like that, when once you get service connected, just to kind of connect the dots for people, it's not just a monthly compensation. You're also available to go to the VA and get free health care for that particular disability. So you could choose to get private care, but if push comes to shove, you know that you could always lean on the VA. If you get that service connected, you can lean on the VA to get treatment, like you said, if it gets worse.
Yes, and I did go through the VA healthcare system. Once I ended up getting my rating, and you know, it's basically I said, hey, you know, this was an issue, right? And so let's take a look at your medical record, and you know, the fact that it was 2 inches thick, right? They just started looking at other things, and it's kind of like, well, you hurt your back a lot. How's that? Mm. How's this foot with the hardware doing? You know, stuff that I never even thought about. And I'm not going to lie, as I get older and fatter, I feel my foot. And this is something that, you know, 15 years ago, I never felt.
Definitely. And the interesting thing, so the skin cancer thing is an interesting one, because it's one of, and the back and even the foot, is the longer that you wait post-military to file your claim, the more the VA is going to try to blame it on something else. So with skin cancer, obviously in your time in the service, you spent a lot of time out in the sun, you were exposed to the sun, you had a diagnosis of it during that time, but then you had treatment and you no longer had quote unquote skin cancer at the time. So what the way the VA looks at it is, if you fast forward to 20 years from now and that skin cancer came up again, they would blame it on something other than the military. Same kind of thing with a back injury or foot injury. The longer you get away from your time in the military, the more they want to blame it on something else. So that's why what I said earlier, if you get your claim filed and you get it at least service-connected, even if the rating is a 0%, you're ahead of the game than if you wait 20 years down the road.
So true. Like you say, you're already in the system.
Exactly. And then also with the skin cancer, because we've talked a bit on the show a bit about back injuries, orthopedic issues, and PTSD, in refreshing the memory, it's like you have to have a current injury, not just an injury in service, but a current injury. So what they do often with cancers is they'll say, yeah, we saw that you had it in the military, but you don't have it now, and so they don't service connect it. And if I remember correct, that's kind of what was happening in your case at the beginning, or at least they gave you a 0% because they're like, well, you're not suffering any symptoms right now, so we don't care.
And then I went to the VA for treatment, and the dermatologist I was seeing was kind of like, whoa, we need to get on an aggressive treatment method here.
Right.
And so the good thing is it was now my treatment was being documented in their system, right? And so it kind of contradicted what they were saying, that I wasn't injured, for lack of a better term, since they were
exactly they definitely lean on their records a lot more than private records. I also remember in your case, one of the fun things that we did is annotate your service treatment records, because right now they're mostly electronic records, but 10-15 years ago they were Dr. Scribble on a piece of paper. Where the funny thing about it is that when you submit those, service treatment records, are the VA automatically, quote unquote, automatically gets them, but they don't always know what they're looking for. So you file a claim for a back injury and they're looking through the doctor scribble and don't find a back injury, but you can look at it and say, no, that scribble right there says back injury. That scribble right there says skin cancer. And so we did a little bit of annotation on the service treatment records to point out to the VA, no, this is what the doctor's scribble actually says. Because they don't, for one thing, it's not in there, they don't have an incentive really to search it out and to try to figure out what the doctor's scribble said. Do you remember us working on that?
I do. Excuse me.
Yes, so you were able to like, okay, I know I had a back injury around this time, and I can see that that's what it says is back injury.
Yeah, and I remember we were just basically going through, and honestly, it was the dates. It was, mm-hmm. I know that in September of this year, this happened, so we were just going off the dates, and like you said, just pulling chicken scratch out of my record to, here was this appointment, here was this one, here was this one. And right. I also happened to have the misfortune of my medical record got lost while I was in the Navy, so that was tough, too.
Yeah, tell me a little about that, because it's not that uncommon. How did you end up locating them there? Where they just show up?
I did not end up locating it, but somebody had actually said to me at my very first duty station when I left Great Lakes after a year of training, they said, everywhere you go, they're going to hand you your records. This is the only time you're going to have your hand on your records, so go down to Kinko's and make a copy of everything. What I did is I happened to be home on leave. I gave it to my mom. She went to work, 21-year-old kid. She made a copy of everything. But I kind of just did that every duty station. Every time I transferred to duty station, I made a full copy of my record. So when my record actually got lost, I was able to say, well, here's a copy.
Right. And that happens a lot. I mean, it seems so weird that it happens like in modern age. I worked with a veteran who served in Korea and Vietnam. And his story is he was serving on DMZ in Korea. He was on his way home, and he had shipped his stuff home, including his medical records and stuff. And they ended up diverting him and sending him to Vietnam. So his medical records never included anything with regards to Vietnam. So that's one of those kind of puzzle pieces that we, as an attorney representative, we have the resources and the ability to kind of put the puzzle together to be able to show the VA that it's not that it didn't happen, it's that you guys lack the records, and it's not as common as you would think that a government agency bureaucracy would lose records. Imagine that.
Go figure, huh?
Definitely. So your claims process, like we've talked before about how you have to, you know, you file a claim, you get scheduled for comp and pen exams, they do an evaluation, they decide, you know, medical opinion, are you service connected, and then what your evaluation is. And with you having been overseas a number of times, you had a little bit of difficulty in getting into those C&P exams.
Yes, it was definitely an issue getting to the appointments. And I remember we were running into an issue, basically, like I was ducking the appointments, for lack of a better term, or refusing to go. Isn't that what they were kind of looking
at? That's what they were claiming? That's what you were claiming, and yet they were ordering you for an exam when you're on the other side of the world?
Mm-hmm. And then when I finally did get back in the country and we were able to schedule all of my exams, it was just an interesting process. It seemed like I had an orthopedic surgeon do surgery on my foot. Mm-hmm. But when I went for a consultation on my foot, it was with a nurse practitioner.
That happens a lot, yes.
Same thing with my skin cancer. You know, I went and saw an oncologist, an MD, but I met with the physician's assistant. You know, and they were always the ones telling me, hey, there's nothing wrong with you, you're fine. And mm-hmm. I found out later that was very common with the VA.
Definitely.
They just use a lower level of care to do their assessments. Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what having a good representative is important, to be able to point out to. So there's a what we call a NOR challenge. It's the name of a case. It's NOHR, where you as a veteran have the right to request the proper credentials of the person who examined you at the VA, to ask the VA, essentially, show me that they're qualified in order to do that. The VA never does that. They usually end up just scheduling for a new exam. But I want to, we're kind of coming up against a break, and I want to definitely next segment talk a little bit about the VA loans process. It's something I don't know anything about, and I would love for you to help our listeners kind of know about that process, what the benefits are, and, you know, how you're able to help them. So we're going to take a break here. When we get back, we're going to talk again with Jeremiah, who is a U.S. Navy veteran. He is also has been through the compensation process, deals with VA loans, so we're going to help provide that resource to our audience. If you have any questions coming up, please feel free to call us at 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222. This is the Veterans Voice, live on KABC 790 out of Los Angeles. Welcome back to the Veterans Voice. This is Amanda Manier. I am your host, and we are broadcasting live on KABC 790. Tonight we're talking with Jeremiah, who is a U.S. Navy veteran. He has gone through the VA claims process in some issues and also in the midst of them on others. And he also is a specialist in VA loans. So we've been talking a little bit about his history in the military, his career in the military, how he transitioned out, his claims process. And on this last segment, I want to talk about VA loans. It's something that I know very little about, and I would like to kind of give a little bit of education to the people who are listening, since, as you mentioned earlier, when you're transitioning out of the military, you don't really get told anything about this. So let's talk a little bit about kind of how you got involved with VA claims, or I'm sorry, with VA loans, and then we'll go from there as to kind of what the benefits are for a veteran to pursue that versus a conventional loan.
Absolutely. I bought my first house in 2008 when I got out of the Navy. I knew mm-hmm. absolutely nothing about the mortgage process, about buying a house, anything about the real estate process, and I knew even less about VA loans. I knew that we had a VA loan as veterans, but I didn't know anything about it. I went to buy a house. I was talking to a mortgage guy, and you know, he basically says, well, since you... He knew I was a veteran, knew I was mm-hmm. transitioning out of the Navy at the time, and he just says straight up to me, he's like, well, since you don't have 20% down, we have programs like FHA or other mm-hmm. government low down payment programs. And I was like, oh, tell me more. You know, FHA is a 3.5% down payment program that requires mortgage insurance and upfront premiums. Didn't know that, but I was like, you know, I've come to understand what it was, but I was like, well, still, it's low cost alternative to get into a house for me. And I really want to buy a house. My mom was going through her skin cancer, chemotherapy at the time. And I wanted to have a house, have a stable place for her too, and help with my transition out of the Navy. So I went ahead, I bought my house. refinanced my house a year later. Refinanced my house again a year later. So interest rates were just going down. This is 2008, 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. Purchased another house. And then I bought another house. Never once knew about the VA loan. And I blame myself because this was over like a four-year period, and I was just ignorant. I wasn't aware that it was out there. But I was also, when I'd asked about it, the one lender mortgage guy that I asked, I said, what about the VA loan? He told me that it was difficult. Everything had to be approved through CalVet, and it was a worthless program, and the interest rates were higher. All of it was lies. I found out when I was in the industry and I actually knew what I was doing, I went back and looked at all my mortgage paperwork. He just got paid really, really well for putting me in that loan.
The money for him, or just lack of, or complete ignorance about the VA loan process, because some mortgage brokers will just avoid it completely because it's like, oh, that's too complicated. I don't want to have to deal with that.
Yes, and I deal with a lot of realtors who don't want to deal with VA loans, and they're scared of the transaction just because they say, you know, the VA loan is designed for veterans. It's there. It's a benefit. It's an earned benefit. Right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Allows us as veterans to purchase a house for zero down. Right? But in addition to the zero down, there's also certain protections in place that protect the veteran, certain inspections that have to be performed, certain repairs that need to be done. And there's also fees that can't be charged to the veteran in the transaction. Right? It's we either as the lender have to pick them up, seller. And so a lot of times realtors they won't deal with a VA transaction. And fortunately, that stigma is going away, and they're becoming a lot more friendly and familiar to it. And a lot of times when people see a pre-approval coming across for VA paperwork, they almost know that the transaction is going to go a little bit smoother because it is guaranteed by the government.
Yeah, and so definitely.
I found that it has been more helpful over the past few years.
Yeah, and I've, you know, interestingly enough, I know very little about it, but I know realtors, including my sister, who is based as a realtor, and she's based out of Colorado Springs, which is a high military, you know, overturn and veterans there and all that kind of thing. And so she has gone as a realtor intentionally to learn about it because it's so relevant to her community. And I would imagine, you know, California, Texas, and Florida are some of the highest concentration of veterans, that it would, you know, behoove not only mortgage brokers, but also realtors to educate themselves on that. Cause it allows veterans to get in homes, like you said, with zero down, where they're not dealing with, you know, a lot of other restrictions. It's a very controlled, like you said, a benefit. I like that you pointed out that it's a benefit to the veteran that is earned.
It is an earned benefit. And what's nice is it's a multiple use benefit. You can use it more than once. It's not a one and done type thing. You can't use your VA loan, go out and buy one house and just be done with it. You can use your VA loan. Let's just say you purchased a house 3 years ago with your VA loan and your interest rate was 5%. And interest rates are very low right now for VA loans. They're under 3%. And you said, I want a lower interest rate. The VA has a program out. It's called an IRRL, IRRRL. Interest rate reduction refinance loan. It's basically a program that looks out for the veteran that says, hey, you already have a VA loan. By doing a refinance, it's going to save you money. So we're going to go ahead, since your loan's already approved, and streamline the process. We just want to run your credit, fill out the application, and verify you still have a job. At that point, your loan is approved and it moves through with minimal documentation. It's one of those benefits that keeps benefiting the veteran. But let's just say you outgrow your property or you just have to move for whatever reason. You sell that house and you go ahead and your VA loan, you can reuse it again to purchase another property. And one thing I've actually been working with some borrowers. Oh, please go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Like I said, I've been working with a handful of borrowers over the past couple of years, and they're a little more savvy, but they basically, you know, have been using their VA loan to buy investment property. And that's not what the VA loan is there for. And so it's not there to make you rich. But what they're doing is you can buy up to a 4-unit property with your VA loan as long as you live in one of the units. So I'm working with veterans who are just going, they've got a stable income, they're able to afford the mortgage, they're buying a property where the unit's already rented out, so they're able to use that rent And for zero down, they're walking into a cash flow investment and a place to live. And they're basically, they're becoming savvy enough and knowledgeable enough of the loan process that once we've got enough equity established in their property, we can refinance the loan and change the loan type for the property. And then they use their VA loan to do the same thing over again.
Wow. That's something I hadn't been aware of. Now, I do know that, or I'm wondering, I guess, if with the people that we work with, we're, you know, the majority of them are 100% disabled, or that's where we're pursuing. What's your experience on dealing with VA loans versus non, if they are getting VA disability benefits? Like, does the VA loan understand that better of like, okay, they're permanent and total, they're always going to be getting their, you know, $3,400 a month, and it's a guaranteed government payment. Have you had any experience with, does the VA loans recognize that a little better than a conventional or an FHA?
Yes, they do. And what it is, it's actually written into the VA guidelines as part of the underwriting process. I'm just going to keep the numbers real simple. Let's just say a veteran is getting $1,000 a month in disability, right? The VA understands and the guidelines understand that $1,000 a month is non-taxable income, right? So it's that $1,000 is going to be $1,000 deposited into their check. Because of the way taxes are figured into the equation and everything, we're actually able to top that money up by 25%. So a veteran who's making $1,000 a month in disability for loan purposes is technically making $1,250. So it helps them out for the qualification process.
That's awesome. And so is it fair to say that if a veteran is talking about pursuing a home, they're talking to a mortgage broker who has not brought up the VA loan to them, they should probably be talking to somebody else?
Yes. The if not the first question, are you a veteran? Right. And some lenders, I work with people who they're not veterans. They don't have a lot of experience with the VA loans. It's not their niche. So they won't even ask the question. But then when it comes up, they're like, oh, wow, that's a game changer. So
awesome. They're working with real quick before we have to break, Jeremiah, tell us how to get a hold of you if somebody's pursuing a VA loan or another mortgage.
You can call me direct. My phone number in my office is 916-440-6985. Or you can go to my website, jerryoconnor.loans, J-E-R-R-Y. OConnor.loans.
Awesome. And we'll get that posted on our site on 790 AM. Thank you for joining us for the Veterans Voice.